What's up, everyone? My name is McKenna Herford, and I have a PhD in counseling psychology. Why listen to this podcast, Revealing the Ivory Tower? Well, basically, I'm so sick and tired of the Ivory Tower, which is basically a metaphor for people who are fancy and have been stuck in their research laboratories for 20 years and have lost touch with reality and real people, and are studying things that are not really impactful in any way, and a lot of times are pretty biased. And truthfully, I've had my own negative experiences, including searching a medical diagnosis for a really long time, finally got it, thank you, and my own experiences in grad school. So I'm here because people know me for my realness, and so I want to tell you the realness, my own perspectives, the biases, the research, and I'll have different guests talking about a lot of different topics. So let's dive in, tear apart this tower once and for all, and have real conversations with people that the research actually affects. Happy Wednesday, listeners. This is such a fantastic Wednesday. It snuck up on me, and it's special because it is the first birthday of this podcast. And to be completely honest, I forgot that it was coming up. And so we actually recorded this episode in honor of my personal birthday. And I realized, oh, wow. Okay. No, actually, the podcast birthday is coming up. I couldn't believe it. It's really flown by. And I wanted to do something totally different for this episode. So instead of doing the typical, I interview someone who's an expert in some specific field, we switched it up. So I am actually interviewed by kind of a big deal on TikTok and Instagram. I'm not going to spoil her name for you because I want you to listen because she's amazing and hilarious. And it's more lighthearted. Not that most of my episodes aren't lighthearted, but this one is a lot more laughter involved. Random questions, some of the questions I asked you guys on Instagram, and so I answer those, and also some random ones she threw in there. There's a lot of funny information. I still go through some interesting information about mental health, so you'll still learn a lot, and it's the lighthearted thing that I think we all need right now. And so I hope you enjoy this episode. I'm really excited. I mean, I can't believe it. The first birthday, you guys. For this episode, we would try something a little different, just one time, see how it goes. And I've covered a lot of heavy topics recently and also just wanted people to get to know me a little more. And so we're flipping the script a little bit and I'm having someone interview me. And I was very picky about who I thought should interview me. And so I'm not even going to give you an introduction because I don't think you need one, but I would love you to introduce yourself in the way that you want to introduce yourself and give a plug in for your Instagram page.
Oh my gosh. Oh, okay. I totally will. Oh God. Now all of a sudden I feel so socially awkward and I'm not even like really in front of other human beings. and I'm also like a social media figure. So it's like, I should be used to this, but never gets easier. Okay. Hi, I am Christina Guarino. I am a licensed professional counselor in the state of New Jersey. I have met McKenna, gratefully have met McKenna through a podcast that I was doing with another colleague of mine a while back. So we had to put that on pause because our lives are busy, but I do have a relatively decent TikTok following.
You're famous.
Yeah. I'm not that famous, but no, my account is pretty small compared to others, but no, I mean, I love it. And what I love about the platform is it allows me to focus on breaking stigmas and, in about therapy and mental health. And, I met McKenna because of that as well. So Christina_LPC is my TikTok handle and my Instagram handle, which I am horrible at keeping up with Instagram. I try. I'm terrible at it, but it's Christina_LPC108.
And I mean, people follow TikTok. TikTok's very interactive. So sounds like TikTok is more active for you. So people should go on there. I personally follow her and can vouch for this, especially the Christina audio that you've used several times. It doesn't get old because your name is Christina and it's in the audio. Like, what are the chances? It's so good. So anyway, people need to follow that.
Yes, it will be my Sedate Me series. I feel like I can keep going with it. It is hands down my favorite audio on TikTok. I, as much as I do talk about like serious topics and I will like breaking stigmas and all that, I also use a ton of humor because I think it's really important that we laugh about the things that, I don't know, we can laugh about the things that affect us and not in a bad way. Like, it's good to laugh and therapy humor is hilarious and I use a lot of it. So that is a lot of my content is humorous. And then I am quite snarky here and there, so I could throw in a bit of snark. So
I do appreciate that. Yeah. And I think the humor, like you said, the humor is needed, which is also why I wanted to do this episode. I'm saying it's a birthday episode because it's around my birthday, but really it's to introduce myself in kind of a different way to my listeners. And also I've covered a lot of heavy topics recently, like human trafficking, trauma, like all kinds of stuff. And so I thought we could break it up and just this one time have someone else interview me, which is different for me to take the back seat. So we'll see what happens.
Like when you texted me and or messaged me and said, do you want to interview me like for my, you know, my listeners, blah, 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 something light for my birthday. They ask a lot of questions. I don't get to put it out there. I was like, yes. And when I'm like, I am here for it, here for this. So I'm like very excited to like flip the script on her a little bit. And we have to have a lighthearted thing. And it's good to know who you're talking to, because aside from the serious topics, which you have amazing insight on what you talk about, and you're so raw and you're so honest. She's also very funny, and I think you guys need to see that lighter side of her too.
True. Yes. When people think that I'm not funny, I take that a lot more personally. Like, fine, if you think I'm an asshole or I'm just not very smart, well, like whatever. But like, do you think I'm funny?
Am I funny? Like, do I make you laugh? Okay.
Perfect. And I hope also like this kind of aligns with what you do too, of breaking the stigma about talking about mental health. It's so needed. I think the younger generations are doing a better job, but still a lot of work.
And I think it's also important that you and I as mental health professionals, I know we have different credentials, but that we normalize that we're humans too. And that I think that that's so important. Like, I am not one. I am incredibly transparent. I am so transparent with my clients, whatever. I'm like, you and I have talked about this before. Like, that's why I love that you're doing this, to show your transparency. Like, I'm a human. Like, let's have a little bit of fun. Like, I'm not all serious and talking about serious topics.
Well, where do you want to start?
All right. So I have questions that I wrote out, but I'm also a very free-flowing kind of person. So let's see where this goes. Let's start with the basics, because I think it's important to just get the basics out of the way. This way, this will cover any questions that people have asked you probably on your Instagram. Okay?
Okay.
And you guys need to follow her on the TikTok, by the way. You need to follow her on the TikTok, because my girl, like, let me tell you something. She is no joke. And when she goes at people, I cackle out loud. Like, we need to hype her. We need to hype her on the TikTok. Just do what I said. Okay. McKenna, birthday princess. Question number one. Mm-hmm. What made you get into this lovely and stress-free field?
Oh man. Lovely and stress-free field. That was good. So growing up, I was a theater nerd. So I was in competition theater and stuff. And so I thought, I'm going to grow up and be like a famous actress for a while. And I was ready for it. And my parents were like, I feel like you need a backup plan. But I was young at the time. I was like 14. Yeah, about to turn 15. And so they knew that they had time to sway me. And then, because I'm from the Gulf Coast, Katrina hit. And unlike what most people think, New Orleans actually didn't get a direct hit. We did. The reason why New Orleans got all the news coverage is, number one, people are more familiar with that location, but also because they're below sea level and the levees broke. And so that's why there was a lot of flooding and stuff like that. And so right now, of course, there's Ida, which actually they are getting a very direct hit, but Mississippi did and Katrina. And so, like, you learn about trauma in the individual person, but seeing collective trauma like that, just mass trauma on a big level, and then just trying to heal afterward. And then every single time there's another storm, there's trauma symptoms that come up and you see those kind of get activated. So that's really what started me off. It's also my birthday is bittersweet every year because Katrina hit this day, 16 years ago, which is of course another freaky thing about Ida hitting today. It's like, it's the anniversary. And so, yeah, so I just turned 15 whenever this happened. And so I wanted to be a psychologist for a really long time because I had to get therapy afterward, like a lot of people did. And so, yeah, that really kind of solidified it for me. I wavered at times. I wanted to go into law instead, but I can still flirt with the legal field without actually having to commit to it. And I have commitment issues. So it actually works for me how everything turned out. So then I decided to go to school for 11 years and now work in this, like you said, lovely stress-free field.
Oh, you threw in like the 11 years. Went to school for 11 years. And yeah.
That's the person with commitment issues.
That is, you know, just so you know, I also wanted to be an actress. I wrote my Academy Award acceptance speech when I was 13. No one was supportive of that goal of mine. That's so, hilarious. You know, I had to go and flail for a little bit in order to know that I needed therapy, to know that I wanted to be a therapist. So that, I get that. But I did want to go to law school at one point. So that was actually part of I graduated with criminal justice. So you're like my soul sister from the South. But I think that like it's really significant. Like that was like very symbolic. I was getting like, oh my gosh, like emotions. I'm like, that's only the first question. Damn.
Don't worry, we're not diving too deep in the emotions. But I also think it's when people ask that question, I mean, we're either gonna give this generic answer of we want to help people. But most of us have been through some shit.
Yeah.
Like a collection of shit or just one significant event of shit. And that's how we wanted to go. Not all of us, but a lot of us. And so whenever that question is asked, it's a little nosy at times because then, of course, like I'm either going to give this generic answer or I'm going to give that one, right? Which is super heavy. And then people get uncomfortable and they don't really know what to do. And I'm like, well, I think we need to talk about this though, because you asked the question, you clearly wanted the answer, and there is a trajectory for most people. It's like law school. A lot of people have some like emotion or medical school. Some people have some personal event that happens to them or something like that. And I think for therapy and therapists, especially, that's the case. Yeah.
I really don't know many therapists personally, people I've interacted with, whether it be on social media, whether it be like in my life, I don't really know many who haven't been through something, which is why they decided to get into the field.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely not for the money necessarily. Just so you know, if anyone's confused and think it's that they're doing it for the money, then that's very much not true.
No, whenever I would go to a medical appointment after this, right? So I had set in my mind pretty young that I was going to be a psychologist. So anytime I go to a doctor's appointment or something, they'd say, oh, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or like, what do you want to major in or whatever? And I would always say psychology. And they'd say, oh, you know, that's really interesting, but you don't make any money in that. And I would always think, wow, you're really pretentious. You're going in for the wrong reasons. And now that I'm actually in the field, I'm like, oh, oh. I see what they're saying.
Oh, I get it. Okay. It all makes sense. Yes. But no, I mean, and I could tell just from knowing you and like, you love what you do. So like, that's very clear, very passionate about what you do.
I hope so. Cause I got to tell you that content creation takes a long time to do.
Oh,
I cannot imagine for you.
Listen, it is a whole nother dimension. I have entered a world now let's just go full circle. I wanted to be an actress. Now I'm applying these innate skills
that yes.
and I'm putting them, I'm throwing them into my content. Like, it's no joke. I don't even know. I tried to take a picture of like in normal light the other day with someone and I'm like, oh my God, it's not a TikTok filter. Like, oh my God, this is how I look. Like, God, like that's how absorbed, but yes, it takes a lot, but.
Yes. And I wish I could also hear your 13-year-old acceptance speech.
I wish I saved it. If I had known, like older me would have told younger me to save that and frame that, because that was something. That was something. I'm not going to lie and say that I didn't have a group of clients when I worked in residential get me a little plastic Oscar. They did, because of my
father. I love that.
Yeah. I was very dramatic when I ran groups. I did a lot of acting, role playing, and it came full circle.
Love it.
Without the celebrity salary, but yes.
I mean, you could get there though, I think.
Well, we could talk another time about my like Real Housewives of New Jersey plan. So that's a whole nother thing.
I just finished watching that entire series, just FYI. So we can talk later time. Especially based on the face you're giving me right now.
That's just like, I can't give away all my secrets. I would not mind being on that show in some capacity as not a housewife.
Right.
Because I'm not getting married to anybody and I don't live in a house like that, but that maybe in some sort of like helping way, I don't know. Celebrity therapist.
There you go.
But yeah. Okay. What is this is still the basics. What is your favorite disorder to work with or to like learn about or listen to?
This is a tough one. Cause I have intentionally stayed in general mental health, like outpatient. I get to see all of the things because I get bored very easily. And so I like getting a good variety. I tend to describe myself as Dr. House, except I am allergic to Vicodin and I can't do 10 other people's jobs like he somehow got away with on the show. So that piece, but with the, we don't know what to do. And so we don't really know what's going on and any complex things. Those are the things that I'm like, give them to me. Or if they haven't been able to find a therapist that's a good fit, or there's a lot of bias against this client or whatever, I tend to take them on. So yeah, I've had a lot of really complex cases come in. Even for assessment, for therapy, trying to tease it apart. I love a good puzzle. I get to feel a little bit like a detective and trying to put the things together. So I don't know that there's necessarily one specific disorder. I'm really curious about all of them. I tend to go in phases. Like right now, I was also diagnosed with ADHD and I'm going through the recent research that's been published because it's a lot more complex than we had thought, and the name doesn't really reflect like what it is. There are also some other really fascinating ones. Or I also like learning about how medical disorders can interact with mental health or cause mental health issues and stuff like that. So it's really hard to answer that. But basically, if it's really complicated or people don't want to work with it, or the person's really violent or whatever the case is, I want that person. I want that person. And I want to work with that person. And usually there's like a huge grin on my face. Anytime we've done, I've kind of become, this is why I got my Spider-Man neck tattoo, is because, well, I'm number one, I'm a Marvel fan, but also anytime we would have staffing or supervision and there's just something else going on, I just start like grinning. And so people are very aware of that. And so even in supervision, if we did group supervision or whatever, supervisors would always call on me and I would say, ooh, my spidey senses are tingling. Like there's something else going on here. And I want to know what that thing is. Like, for example, there was on my internship, there was another intern who had a really complicated assessment. I think it was for PTSD maybe or something. I can't remember. But there were like these fugue states that this person would go through and they just would lose chunks of time and would like wake up in these awkward spots. And just the way it was being presented, there was so much missing. And I immediately said, I don't have all the evidence to support this. My spidey senses are telling me that I think this is a seizure disorder. Like, I think this is a seizure disorder. Sure enough, like comes back a week later and seizures just everywhere, all over the place. Wow. So the person is like losing these chunks of time because of this neurological activity. So that's like one example of like, oh, I get really excited, or people get really stuck. And maybe, you know, we're taught to those, that kind of like inner voice or those red flags that come up. We really, even as therapists, especially as women, I think we're taught to kind of ignore those. Mm-hmm. So I tend to just ask questions about like the dynamic in the room. So for example, someone consulted me about a year ago, I think, and she also had a really complicated assessment that she was doing. It was a personality assessment. So trying to see if there are any personality disorders, like borderline personality disorder, for example. And there was a lot of kind of this like performative behavior. So really kind of this theatrical kind of behavior, really trying to get attention, making sure security is called, but also like making a lot of eye contact with her to see if she's watching. And so I would just ask questions like, so do you think in the room he's wanting, clearly doing this for shock value, right? But what's the sense that you're getting? Is it he's wanting you to be afraid of him? Like he's wanting power over you? Is it he's wanting your adoration? Is it he's wanting sympathy? Is he just testing you? Where do you think this is going? And usually those questions are the ones that ask, like kind of open things up. So that's where I'm at, is I really enjoy the dynamic in the room for really complex cases. And then especially when there's like a mix of like medical, mental health stuff, all kinds of things. Love it.
It sounds like you're a lot like me in a sense that like, you're like very eclectic in your style. Like it sounds like you, and I'm the same way. Like you meet a person, you can't really know what modality you're going to use with someone or the approach you're going to take until you're in the room with someone and you can feel their energy and you can get a sense of what direction you need to go in.
Yes, that's a really good point. And I'm actually surprised people, I put a poll on my Instagram story to ask like what questions people, just information people would want to know. And I'm actually surprised that one wasn't asked, was what's your theoretical orientation? Like what theories do you tend to use? Because yeah, you're right. I used to be very limited in my master's program and just do cognitive behavioral therapy. And now I'm like, gross. If I do that by itself, it does work for some people. No. That doesn't account for a lot of things. So yeah, it's integrative or eclectic, like you said, intentionally. You know, there are definitely people in our field where they don't really know what they're doing. So they're just shooting from the hip. And so I've worked in settings where they wanted you to use specific theories. And so that actually helped me a lot, because when I swayed from that, it helped me, like that practice helped me justify, okay, this is why this one isn't working. I'm not just shooting from the hip. I can articulate like why this theory isn't going to work for this person. For example, someone coming in and her kid had cancer, I think, and was undergoing treatment. She had just lost her job and was laid off. They were about to lose the house. The abusive husband like just got out of prison. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to use CBT with this person. That's not going to happen right now. There's a lot of things outside of her. And so doing CBT in this moment right now is not going to help. So I did some feminist theory stuff in that case. Sometimes I do psychodynamic. Sometimes it's a little DBT. So I dabble, like you said. But I think that's the biggest piece is for clients too. Like when you see people on Psychology Today that have like 5,000 theories that they use, I want to throat punch them. Yeah.
Red flag. Oof. That's a red flag. In case anyone wants to know, if you go on someone's profile, Psychology Today, Therapy Den, or any other place where you can look or to find a therapist, like if they list every modality, like no.
So bad. So bad. So that's red flag number one. I guess we're just going to pepper those Easter eggs throughout this
episode. Oh, I love that. Yes. That just, it comes up so naturally. Yeah. Because CBT, I use the basics of CBT, emotions, thoughts, behaviors, all interconnected. And that's like the basics of what you could do, but there are so many different directions you can go in based on someone's circumstances. But my gosh, I want to stay with the basics and then I'm going to go into some deep cuts, but.
Ooh, okay.
Let's do a little, let's pepper in some humor here. Ready. Tell me about your funniest mental health story pertaining to something that happened to you when you were working.
Oh, I have several. including, and some of them are also awkward. I think that was one of the questions too. So I could.
That was the next one. I think I wanted to fuse them together. That's where I was going.
Yes. Okay, perfect. Because these both fall under that. So the first one is when I started off in corrections as a baby master student. So that just was the starting point for me and where I just held everyone to that standard after that. And it was a very wild ride. And so in this particular jail and the culture that was in this jail, I probably should give some context. It was a county-owned jail, so not privately owned, which I respected them for, but that meant they didn't have a lot of money for things. And so they couldn't afford to hire enough correctional officers or security or anything like that. They just couldn't afford it. And so legitimately, people could just overthrow the jail if they wanted to. And so what would happen is the correctional officers would overcompensate and be extra violent to try to make sure that that didn't happen. And it's not my opinion. The Department of Justice investigated this jail for 5 years, came up to the same conclusion.
Oh, wow.
And so that's like kind of the culture is like there was this reactivity. I don't even want to say rebelliousness because it was legitimate. They were being mistreated. They weren't being cared for enough in a way that really made a difference. And so that'll set the stage for this. I feel like that context is necessary. So a lot of them, no other jail that I've worked in, but this particular one, a lot of them would flash their penis a lot of times, a lot. I've seen way too many penises for an entire career. So
I'm sorry.
And of course it's for shock value. One time this, and if you get like, you don't get used to it. Of course the shock value starts kind of wearing off over time. And there were different ways that they would deal with it. Like if you filed a complaint, they would put that person in a pink jumpsuit. And that was like really well known that that's like the offense that you're accused of doing or whatever. So one time this guy did it. It was in the lower security part. So they're just kind of freely walking around in this big cell and area and stuff like that. This guy did it at the top of the stairs. Unfortunately, he did it while I was checking in with one of my current clients who turned around and saw that this guy did that and went upstairs and just beat the shit out of this guy. And I felt so awkward because I'm like, I don't condone violence,
but we can unpack this later.
I was like, okay, they really didn't teach you this in school. Like, I can't condone this. He was trying to, you know, advocate for me, and it's in a weird, he's in a power down position. There were so many factors to this. And in my head, I'm like, okay, this is kind of funny, and it's not okay. How are we going to work through that? We did later. And he was like, no, I'm not going to, that was so disrespectful to you. Like, that's not okay. And in my head, I'm like morally versus ethically here. So that's like my funny. Like,
cause you know, for like a split second you went, thanks dude. Like that. Thanks.
Yeah,
that
of was- course. I was like, oh man. But in my head, I'm like, okay, well I can't let him know that. Right. Like,
of course.
And it was just so awkward because I'm like watching this happen. I can't just like walk away. So like it's security involved and I have to like pull him out. And he's like, no, I'm not going to let him, you know, do that to you or whatever. I can say that that guy never did that again.
I mean, let's talk about the dynamics of all of this, changing behaviors. Like, okay. Like,
there you go. That's one way to deal with it. There was also another case. This one wasn't awkward as much as it freaked me out, but also funny. I love working with any type of what we call psychotic disorder. So schizophrenia is probably the most well-known one, but definitely not the only one. This one, I was just doing an update for the psychiatrist because he was on meds on the outside. So like legally he had to get the same medications. So I was just getting an updated history and background. And so he had been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, which is the simplest way to put it is a lot of the like hallucinations that people may have or delusions or some of those pieces of schizophrenia. And then there's like mood stuff. So either it looks a little bit like bipolar disorder or major, you know, depression, stuff like that. So at one point I'm like asking him about the hallucinations. He said, yeah, I see
Lucifer sometimes. And I think there was, you know, some demons in there that I can't remember the name of. And I said, oh, okay. And he's like staring at the spot behind me. And I said, do you see him now? You know, I'm like asking, do you see him now? Like, is everything okay? And he just nodded. And I swear to God, Christina, the lights flickered. And I was like, all right, we're getting out.
Stop it.
No, I'm not fucking with this. We're leaving.
I would have been, I don't even know if I could have been able to hold a face. Like, you know, like I don't know if I mean, in the moment we do it because we have, but like that would have been like, oh, hell no, no.
No, especially because it was like those automatic lights, right? Because they wanted to save money. And so why was the light flickering? And that's never happened at any other point when I was working at the gym. It just flickered on off. I was like, okay, so we're going to take you back up there. We'll do the rest of this later. And in the meantime, I'm like, holy shit, I have to get up here.
Why am I doing this again? Why did I want to do this again?
In a stress-free field, right? I was like, no, I'm out. I'm out, guys. I'm white. I'm not that white. We're not checking this out. We are leaving.
I gave you a lot of credit. I honestly, put me in the center of people detoxing from like drugs and alcohol, and I shine like a bright penny, but like put me in that setting. I don't know. Like that to me is like probably out of my scope. Like I give you a lot of credit for that. I find it very interesting. Like I'll read about that stuff all day. I'll listen to podcasts about that all day. I'll hear her talk about it. That's fine. But like, no, no, no.
Yeah. You know, everyone has their own. No, I won't go back there. I love the clients. I love the population. Hate the system. And so I was just like, I can't work for the system. But yeah, I have enough stories, even in the short period that I did, to kind of like last a lifetime, I think. And I did see people there too, because it was in Florida. So I did see people detoxing off bath salts, formaldehyde, like you name it. Because it was there. And I'm sure you've seen your fair share of people detoxing. So that was, whew.
Yeah. The bath salts is any of those types of drugs. Like, I mean, like that's, it's actually quite scary to see. It's, it's very, very scary to see. Cause it's like, you are so like in almost like you are in like a drug induced psychosis. Like it's.
Yeah. I can say that none of the lights flickered when I was asking them about it. So I felt a lot safer doing that.
I love it. I love it. Well, that was definitely funny and awkward. Okay. This is my favorite question.
Oh my God. Okay.
This might go in with the question that I want to ask. It could go both ways. What is your mental health hot take? Unpopular opinion.
Okay. I'm going to lose followers for this one. And I've accepted that. But I would like people to hear me out before that. Okay. So just give me a second to explain why. And hopefully it will make a little more sense. I am not a huge Brené Brown fan. That is my hot take. And that's, a lot of therapists didn't like that response either. Here's the reason why. Although there are a lot of therapists that say, oh, I love her for me. I just don't love her necessarily for my clients all the time. She does a lot of work with like shame, guilt. I love all of that. My biggest problem, well, number one, I'm very much April from Parks and Rec. So there's some of that in here and I have to like own that. But the other piece is the types of clients that I work with, there has to be some sense of physical safety and like privilege to be able to dive into shame and guilt and all those things. And a lot like the population we were just talking about, right? Like the jail that I was working in, most of the people in there were from really dangerous neighborhoods. The homicide rate was up there with Miami. Like there were a lot of shootings. There was a lot of intergenerational economic issues. There was a lot of racial issues because of course it's still the South, because the panhandle of Florida is much more, it's not like the rest of Florida. It's not real Florida as Floridians would say. So starting there, like again, like that's my starting point. And that's going to shape the rest of my experience, and it's clients that I seek out even now, is the people that you can't do CBT because it's not going to work. And so even exploring all of that, like, inner work and, like, being really vulnerable, right? Like, all of these emotional pieces and all that work or shadow work or whatever language you want to use, it doesn't really matter. You have to be in a place to be able to do that. And so my only issue is, and again, accepting the fact that the populations that I tend to work with kind of cloud my judgment on this. I think it's fine for most people. I just wish that there was more of a conversation around, there are a lot of exceptions to this and a lot more than I think we realize. So that is why I'm not a huge, like, I think, of course, for a lot of people that are in the space, 100%, go read all the books. She does amazing research. That's pretty well done as far as, like, methodology and how it's done and all that stuff. But yeah, the biggest piece is you have to have the physical safety to do that. It's not actually helpful for you to be diving and being emotionally vulnerable if you're literally in a place where, like, for example, right now in Louisiana, it's not going to be the best time to be diving into our emotions and emotional vulnerability because we're literally physically trying to survive in Louisiana or, like, in the hood, or when we have, like, all these different things going on externally, we may not be in that place. And I think it just happens more often than we're giving it credit for. So on the one, I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, I love it. I think it really normalizes talking about our emotions in a way that's really neglected. We tend to avoid, especially in our culture. So I think that that piece is being broken down really well. Again, we can't use that for everyone. And so what are we putting out for people in these other areas where that can't really apply to?
I do not disagree with you at all. I don't. And I, you know, and I will say I do like Brené Brown a lot. I used to show her TED Talks in my group sessions all the time, just to talk about the you know, when people struggle to be vulnerable, especially when you're in, like, early recovery, it's hard to do that. It offers a comfort and it normalizes vulnerability and shame and all that. And it is a great message. I do love her in that sense. I will tell certain clients, which is goes with your point, to read this book because I think it'll be helpful. I agree with you though. I am not, like, one of those. I do like her quotes. I love the things that she says. She's got great lines. She's got good stuff. But I do agree with you. I'm not, like, a diehard, like, Brené person. I don't worship her like that. I do have a lot of respect for her and I love the stuff that she puts out. But I think what you're talking about, I honestly, if you lose followers for this, then so be it, because that needs to get talked about and it needs to get talked about more often because we aren't talking about it. I work in private practice in a privileged area, 100%. So I'm also working in private practice with people who can, one, either afford it, self-pay rate, or they carry insurance that I take. So all privileged in that sense. So I think that's really, I'm so glad you said that actually. I'm in agreement. I'm in agreement. And I don't have experience working in that population like you do.
I will say too, I do respect her. Like you said, for example, I love her little cartoon video explanation of empathy versus sympathy. I'm all for it. I love showing people that. It's such a good distinction. And it's in a cartoon video and a really great metaphor. Right. And I will give her a ton of credit in the sense that when she does public speaking and all, she's authentic in that way. There's a lot of this, like, pseudo intellectualism, pseudo vulnerability, where people are like, I'm being really vulnerable and out of my shell. And I'm like, number one, I just don't buy it, because number one, you're either posting about it all the time and you're not actually, this isn't vulnerable to you. It's probably vulnerable to other people. But whatever vulnerability means to you, this isn't really what that is, right? It's like when we talk about people that have, like, really strong emotional reactivity and all that stuff, like, you sharing that isn't necessarily vulnerable for you. And so, but she seems legit, like, very authentic, very congruent in that sense. Unlike a lot of people who are just, yeah, a lot of, like, toxic positivity, just not authentically real and raw. She 100% seems that way. Like, I will give her so much credit for that.
And I think it's important too, and you said something, and I don't mean to, like, just harp on this topic just in and of itself. It is so important about the physical safe space. It is so important to do that because it's not necessary. Everyone deserves to explore those dark places.
Yeah.
And it's going to look different for everybody, and feeling physically safe in a sense too, that you have the support around you to feel what you need to feel in an environment. I think it's so important. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. That's probably the one that, some therapists have done this recently. Like, what's your unpopular opinion? I know I've said Brené Brown. I'm just not the biggest fan of her for that. Again, I have a ton of respect for her. It's just the people that I work with, none of that applies to them. And I feel like that's not being captured in it, but you don't have space to, like, you know, type out all that context. So all I say is I'm not a big fan of Brené Brown, and whoo, the therapists are like, oh wow, that really is a hot take, or that really is an unpopular opinion because of XYZ. And I'm like, well, I'm just, hear me out if I have the space to do it. But again, I do have a lot of respect for her. And I guess the other hot take, even though most therapists would agree with me, although I do see a lot of therapists posting this on their pages, which is problematic, the whole fucking narcissist thing, man. Every single time I lose followers, I can't take it. And if you want to self-diagnose, especially because you don't have access to care, like you said, it's expensive, people may not have insurance, whatever the case is, that's fine. You don't get to go around and diagnose other people, though. That's not how that works. And there's also this implication that it's this categorical thing, like I'm a narcissist and you're not. That's actually not how it works. Everyone's on a spectrum. Everyone's at least a little narcissistic. And it's reductionistic. Like, there's so many different things that can cause people to react that way. And there's this implication, and I see it all the time on mostly coach pages about, like, or authors or speakers or whatever. I went after one the other day on Instagram and she blocked me within 2 minutes. People are assuming that this is like a tactful, well thought out thing in advance by people that engage in these behaviors. And I'm here to tell you, as we've talked about, I have worked with that population. And for the most part, people are generally mindlessly bumbling around and just projecting our shit onto other people mindlessly. That's really what's happening. They're usually, not always, of course, there's an exception, but usually there isn't this elaborate plan to just, like, go, they're not aware. Like, you're giving them too much credit. There isn't this awareness, like this well thought out plan of, like, intent, like well thought out piece. It's I'm projecting my own shit onto people. And yes, of course, it can still be harmful, dangerous, and all these things. My issue is, one, we don't get to diagnose other people. It's not how that works. If you want to diagnose yourself, like, we'll debate that. I can understand that, though. But in no circumstance do I understand people diagnosing other people. And also that takes away from you being able to heal yourself, because it puts all of that on the other person. Of course, they engage in that behavior. Of course they harmed you, probably. And so then, okay, but what about you though? How are you going to heal? Is it just like shitting on this other person? Is that really going to be able to make you heal? Even if it is that true narcissistic personality disorder person where it's all the way at the extreme. And again, I've worked with people like that. And so it just seems like it's this attempt of creating distance. Like, it's creating comfort for me because I can create distance between me and that person. So I give them a quick label so that I seem like I'm nothing like them, as opposed to seeing that we're all kind of like that, sort of on a spectrum, of course, with people on the other side. And it's difficult because whenever I engage in this conversation, immediately the response is victim blaming. I am not negating that people have experienced abuse. The piece that I have a problem with is, number one, diagnosing the other person, like I've said like 3 times now, and that there's also this perception that they can't change. The research doesn't show that. That's not true at all. And there's a lot, especially like psychoanalytic, psychodynamic stuff. There's even some CBT stuff that's been really effective. I've worked with people that it's actually been pretty helpful with. So again, it's very much this, like, we don't have entire posts shitting on people with bipolar disorder. We don't even have entire posts shitting on people with antisocial personality disorder, which could really be some of the behavior that some of these people are, or quote addicts or substance users. Like, we don't have even that, which is a lot more stigmatized. We don't have entire posts shitting on them. So like, it's just like, this unhelpful. I think in the short term, it comforts people because, again, it's like, it's taking it outside of me. Like, it wasn't my fault that this happened. And I think in that sense, it's helpful. I just think it's limited in how helpful it is for the person healing and the other person doing it. Cause, and it's just not accurate. It doesn't mean that what you're experiencing didn't happen. It's the reason why that person engaged in this behavior is not being captured, because it requires a lot of complexity and nuance that people just aren't trained in, even in our field. Like, I'm not just shitting on the, like, people in our field don't even do a great job with this. So that's my soapbox.
Okay. Applause for your soapbox. And I love it. I just sidebar, McKenna, whenever you say, but what about the research? It is like your tag, like you got to make, it's got to be like a hashtag, like hashtag, what about the research? It's got to be like a thing, because that is in all of your videos. And I love when you do that, because then you just straight spit facts. And even I'm not like as researched as you. And like, I listen to you and I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, she's okay. Good. Okay. All right. Love it.
The problem is that I have a lot of mixed feelings about a lot of things, which may confuse my viewers or listeners at times, because I also shit on psychology research. Like,
so wait, but I want to normalize that too.
Yeah.
We as clinicians are able to, one, as humans and clinicians, able to change our viewpoints and see things very differently. Where I started when I was new and green in the field is very different from where I am now. So as far as that we're allowed to grow, we're allowed to not agree with things. Just because something is in black and white doesn't mean we don't have a perspective that might be effective for somebody else too. I just love when you say that, because I think it's good. Normally it's when you're about to go at somebody and I love it. And that's like my favorite post of yours. But I want to say the thing about narcissistic, that I could not agree more. And I have posted, the reason why my account on TikTok got big is because I posted a video about emotional abuse, really based off my own personal experiences. And I too learned more about, I want to say I learned more about narcissistic abuse from social media, in which I was able to see, for me in my healing, able to see my situation a little bit clearer to heal myself. Not everybody has the insight to do that. So that's, I love that you're saying that, because that is so important. My post ended up on like Narc Talk was like huge at that time. I had no intention. So I blew up and ended up, now all of these people are talking about, this one's a narcissist, that one's not. Okay, so I have put out actually posts explaining the difference. People can have narcissistic behaviors. So it's about how you're wording it, right? Like, you can have narcissistic behaviors. The criteria that meets narcissistic personality disorder is very specific. And like you said, it's nuanced. It's something that you can't not, it's specific. And it, yeah, of course you can work through it, just like you can work through borderline personality disorder, very specific criteria. So to label every person who exhibits some sort of narcissistic behavior is very misleading to the general public who doesn't know better. Now, all of a sudden, everyone's a narcissist.
Everyone. I'm a narcissist. You're a narcissist. And yeah, it's a huge problem. And I think
correct people all the time, in like my clients, I have to actually correct them sometimes and explain that to them.
I've heard that a lot from people in private practice, in the sense of like, people are getting so much misinformation from TikTok and having to correct them. Yeah. I think the part that pisses me off the most though, is almost without exception, every single time I see a post about narcissists, there is a link at the bottom because they want profit. They're using, so it's essentially they're
pandering,
trying to warn you. There's so much irony. That's the part that makes me so mad, is like, they're like essentially exploiting you in similar ways that they're warning you about in order for you to purchase their product and make money off you. Like, that's the part that makes me the angriest, is that people are being exploited in the same post that they're telling them this is what a narcissist does, is exploits people. And I'm like, you're literally doing it right.
And to piggyback off of that, any emotionally abusive relationship is going to meet that type of criteria. Not all emotional abusers are narcissistic personality disorder. Like they have, like, they're, and it's not like that. And people see that. People make very, this was going to be my next piece to this. I was going to ask you, and I still want you to answer it because this goes into it. What has been like the biggest piece of misinformation that you've seen on social media in regards to mental health? And like, that was my next thing, because I can go, this can be a whole thing I can go on, because it really generalizes things. You're really pandering to a broken woman who yep. has been abused and is now, you know, looking for, but how is the, I love what you said, how are you healing, right? Like, I had the insight to know to do that because I knew I'm a professional. I was privileged. Some people don't have that. And there are a lot of, coaches out there. Not all coaches, not all, that use this to coach other people into, I could go so many different, I can see your face. You're like, I know. So let's just pull from this. Cause I could keep going and I'm just gonna, it's not fair to you, but what is your biggest piece of misinformation that you've seen on social media? Because this is like a lot of your platform.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just firstly, I think the overall message of my platform continues to change. So I think that, yeah, it probably has evolved into looking at a lot of misinformation. 100% narcissist. And to be fair, because I keep commenting on them, of course, the algorithm thinks that I want to see more of that content. So I just keep seeing more of it and it's horrible. So I'm keeping in mind that maybe my page is just biased and it's actually not that bad. But from what I've heard from other therapists, it actually is that bad on their page too. So yes, 100% narcissist. Number one, I don't use that label at all. It tells me nothing. We don't say borderline. We don't say bipolar person, or we shouldn't, unless they want to be called that. And again, for all the other reasons that I mentioned, and because so many people can engage in abusive behavior, it's not limited to one personality factor or diagnosis or whatever. There are plenty of people with all kinds of disorders and a lot of people without disorders that engage in abusive behavior. So yeah, it's hard. And again, it's just this very rigid message every single time. It's this person will never change. This person, the way that the narcissist does this to you. And again, it's the portrayal is like, it's this very just well thought out, methodical, evil person. And I'm like, no, you're giving people way too much credit. We're mostly just projecting our own shit that we're unaware of on other people. There are some people, yes. And I have worked with those people where it is very methodical. The hair on the back of my neck stood up when I worked with them. Just as a side note, for all you people that love true crime, I also love it too. I have to tell you, it's a little different when you're sitting in the room with them and they have no reason to impress you or try to trick you in any way. Like, the hair on the back of your neck just stands up. And so there's so many different things. But again, it's like, this is the buzzword. And I found this study that I was really grateful for that's now started identifying, you know, big warning signs of misinformation. And it's a lot of the imagery that's being used on these posts and a lot of emotionally laden language, right? So very evoking language intentionally, because they want you to buy their product. That's the biggest piece, is they want you to buy their product. That's the part, again, like, I'm warning you about being exploited while I'm actually exploiting you while doing this. And so that's the part that just makes me the angriest, is that people aren't aware of that. And again, there's this lack of kind of awareness. And for also therapists, I've seen it unfortunately recently, and I just comment on their posts like, what is your actual, like, you're talking about narcissists, you've actually never worked with them. That's the other part that bugs me from therapists, is you're working with survivors of the abuse. You have no idea what actually caused the abuse because you haven't worked with the people engaging in the abuse. I worked with all of that. Also, I find it interesting that, like, this is the thing that's taken off, as opposed to something just in general that would probably evoke more emotion, like pedophilia or hebephilia, right? Like, I don't see any posts about that. This is what a pedophile will do and blah, 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 blah. And generally that's frowned upon, probably more so, probably one of the most frowned upon populations or behaviors in our culture, right? But I don't see any posts about that. So it's just really interesting that that's the thing that people have been running with. They want this like easy answer for their healing. And I understand that. Again, like spending so much time on the other person actually isn't necessarily going to heal us that much afterward. I mean, of course, engage, like understanding how they engage in that behavior, but reducing it to this quick label. The other piece is it actually could intentionally, like potentially create harm in the future, because you think you're looking for only these specific warning signs, because again, things have been so oversimplified. So you think that that's what a narcissist is, or like that's what someone high on narcissism does. So then if these other wide range of behaviors that are abusive come up and they're not narcissistic at all, we may miss that because we've been so hyper-focused on this other piece. So I just word vomited a lot, but it's just, I don't understand. I don't understand it.
And I agree. I agree. It is the pandering to a specific population. And like, I think and here's the sin of it. And this is what gets me on social media, is that posts like that will blow up. And then a professional will post something that says, okay, so say you were involved in narcissistic abuse or emotional abuse, and your former partner had these criteria, and this is how you felt. Well, this is what, here's how you can heal yourself. This is what the thought process that you can use to challenge the thoughts that come in, so you don't take on that person's behavior. Like, that gets no views. And, you know, I mean, maybe I'm just a little salty sometimes, but like,
cause that's like,
and that's the thing that infuriates me the most, is that that's what happens. And unfortunately the algorithm sees that. And then people pick up on that because everybody just wants that oversimplified answer. And they want a reason to blame why they are where they are today. They want to blame that. And I am very big on, okay, we can acknowledge that this happened to you because it's happened to me, but like me blaming and like just focusing, saying, oh, well, he was a narcissist, so, you know, I'm okay now. No. I'm still an abuse victim. I still need to process my feelings. I need to build my confidence back up, because a person like that will deplete your confidence. How do you build your confidence? How do you know your worth? Like, that's the thing that needs to be focused on more, not just so much the fact that, whoop, all right, that's the explanation. I'm done now. I don't have to take responsibility now, but you still have emotions to take responsibility for.
Yeah, for sure. That topic is by far the biggest one that just gets me riled up the most. And then in general, I think there are some, not therapists as much, but people kind of in other fields or just a general population, they've been diagnosed with something. And so they're assuming that whatever that they're experiencing is because of that diagnosis, right? So I have ADHD. So every single thing that I engage in is because of that behavior. And we all do it. There's a bias related to that. Actually, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but we like superimpose everything and assume that that's what it is, right? So I have multiple health problems. And if I didn't have the education that I have, because I was in these support groups, they will wonder like, oh, is this because of the thing that we have? Is this because of this? And so then it's like difficult, because thankfully I have the education that I have, and I've hopefully done enough of the work so I can discern a lot more of like, no, that's actually probably like a normal human experience. Like, that's probably because of this other thing going on, or it could be because of XYZ. And so again, there's a lot of room for human error on social media in general, because it's meant for like efficiency, like quick accessing of information, which is completely opposite of what mental health or psychology in general, even beyond mental health, just it's so complex that we can't possibly like sum this up into a TikTok video, an Instagram post, even if there's like 9 slides on there, and you just can't do it. So yeah, as far as the topic goes, narcissist for sure, quote narcissist. But then in general, there's a lot of just misinformation about psychology, about mental health, there's like this whole thing about Enneagrams. And I'm like, God, they're Enneagram coaches. I'm like, I don't know what that means. If it's just someone that's like trying to get more inspired in life, cool, do your thing, stay in your lane. But they're just, okay, it's limited. Okay, the Barnum effect is real, where we read something and then we're already prone to thinking that that's essentially explaining what we're experiencing. And so we filter out the information that doesn't fit that. And so all we're seeing is the information that does fit that. That's my rant.
Yes, I love it. In accordance with all of this stuff that we're talking about, there's a lot of misinformation on social media, which we've covered. I should probably just do a whole podcast on how much I hate toxic positivity. That just, it fires me. I get fired. I'm like, you know, in like Game of Thrones, when like Daenerys, like she starts to like change, that's how I get, like, I get like that nasty evil, because it drives me crazy and it's so, so harmful. So aside from all of that, because you mentioned toxic positivity, in terms of not social media, but in terms of the system, like the mental health system, this is a big one. What is your least favorite thing about the system in general? Which you might not have just, you, I know you don't have just one. So like, if you guys can see her face right now.
I have a few. So I don't know where's insurance first. I mean, I think we tend to talk about that in general. So insurance is a problem, especially because the people that are judging whether or not they cover your therapy costs don't work in the field. They have no idea what's actually going on, right? And all they see is this category, these very simplified categories that can't possibly explain everything going on with someone or the possible combinations of what could be going on with someone. But we have to put in a label and we also can't commit insurance fraud. So it's sometimes a really difficult line to ride, especially if it's like ADHD assessments. A lot of times insurance doesn't cover it at all, but if it does and you don't fully meet criteria, that puts the psychologist in a really, probably physician too, like in a really difficult spot, because you want insurance coverage for your client or your patient. So it's just, yeah, it's essentially, again, it's for profit. So insurance is all about profit. So it's driving why we're doing diagnosis, why we do all the things that we do. That, I mean, essentially it's insurance companies is a huge problem with this. And now I've even seen that there are like private equity firms supporting a lot of like online therapy options. And I'm like, that is not good. Why would we want that involved at all? Because again, it's driving profit. I think for most businesses, that's fine. But there's going to come a point inherently where there's going to be a big ethical dilemma here where we're pushing profit, but then we have to do what's best for our clients. So yes, insurance is shitty. If I ever meet someone who actually works for a health insurance company and like does mental health stuff, I'm going to have to excuse myself from that conversation because there's just no way. I'm going to be like Ben from Parks and Rec and just be like, have time to tell you all the ways that you're wrong and then turn around back and say, you know what? It's going to bug me if I don't tell you. And then just like rant all over them. I don't know. I'm like having this visual in my head of like, somehow I'm at this party. I don't even do networking. And obviously we're in COVID. Somehow I'm like having this daydream of me being in this, I don't know, this like networking party. And I meet someone like that. And I just like go the fuck off on them. And then I storm out and somehow we overthrow the insurance company institution. I don't know. It's very speaking,
I'm literally wishing I can find an audio that can go with this so I can make a TikTok about this or like tell you to make a TikTok. Like I can't. Like that's like perfect. That's all I keep seeing.
I really need that audio for that Parks and Rec because I remember exactly what scene it was. But yeah, so I mean, obviously, I don't think you can talk to a single mental health therapist and they don't mention insurance. That's a big piece. Mm-hmm. So, and because insurance doesn't tend to cover mental health stuff in general, it's not really prioritized as well as physical health, even though there's a lot of data that they're selecting not to see that, of course, that has an effect directly on your physical health and vice versa at the same time and all that stuff. So, I mean, we can go all day about insurance, but for sure, insurance companies, that's really driving everything now, unless you work in private practice. And then in private practice, you're kind of put in this position of, do I take insurance? do I boycott the entire system and not take insurance, but knowing that it's going to be difficult for people to afford it? I mean, it's just, you can't win. Like, there's no winning here. And the system kind of puts, unfortunately, kind of this tension sometimes between people seeking therapy in general and then providers, when the actual problem is the insurance companies. So,
and the biggest problem, what a lot of people don't realize, and as someone in private practice, I did not take insurance at first. A pandemic hits, people lose their jobs left and right. What am I supposed to do at this point? I'm marshmallowy in the sense that, like, I want people to get help. I can't expect people to afford my rate when they're not working. It's just not fair. So I take insurance. Now, one thing I will say, and I'm not going to go specifics to what insurance companies, I know this sounds crazy, I know this might be a bit controversial, and I know you can agree with me with this. They don't pay the providers, like, not well, and not anywhere near what we're worth for our time. And this topic comes up a lot. They say, oh, therapists, they're so greedy. They're all about the money. Like, they don't take insurance. Well, the insurance companies aren't paying me enough to pay my bills. So I need to pay my bills. Like, and when I'm not even exaggerating, some really pay, especially like state funded, nothing.
Nothing.
It's so frustrating for someone who like loves to help people and wants, if I have the wherewithal and the bandwidth to take on a double what I make, what I have now, and I see anywhere between 30 to like 36 people a week, like if I could physically take on more mentally, I would. And like, it's hard, it's unfortunate, but yes, that was my soapbox. So I'm done now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great example of how essentially insurance companies kind of pit us against each other. It's like, well, the providers want to be paid what we're worth and the clients are not able to afford that. And so we're not able to kind of take a few steps back and realize the big picture here that it's really the insurance piece that's
I can afford to do pro bono work.
Yeah.
I would do it. If I can afford that, like, in my life to like keep a roof over my head, I would absolutely do it. But it's not realistic. And a lot of people can't afford to do pro bono work.
Yeah, it's hard. 100%. It's absolutely difficult. And yeah, that's just one piece. I think the other pieces are, we're really arrogant about what we know about psychology as a whole, outside of mental health, but just human behavior, whether individually or in a group, collectively, whatever that is, but especially related to mental health. We don't really know why antidepressants work. We don't even technically know like what causes mental illness. And we tend to have a backwards way of finding things out. And so that actually happened this week when there was this guy, presumably a therapist, because he said he was. I'm really concerned about that. He was commenting on another therapist page talking about racial trauma. So he commented and said, that doesn't exist, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, there is actually quite a bit of data to support this. And he said, well, those studies are flimsy. And I said, I got news for you, buddy. They're all kind of flimsy in our entire field. So you can't just like cherry pick what you want and like go with it. And also you just obviously you don't get to like negate someone's experience because you don't personally believe in it. That's different from the narcissist argument, because I'm not saying what they've been through hasn't happened. Right. So, yeah. So that was the other piece, was like, I got news for you, buddy. All the research is kind of shoddy, but okay. We have a replication crisis. There was some researcher, I wanted to make a video about this, kind of a fail video, big oof. So there's this big study about academic dishonesty or dishonesty in general that came out and just blew up. I forget when it was. It was a while, like several years ago though. And the authors, like their careers exploded after that. So many steps in academia, for example, like for students change, like it changed a whole lot in academia, the way we view human behavior. And basically the original study was on dishonesty. And if you signed something ahead of you filling something out, right? Like you get something ahead of time that says, I will, you know, fill this out with as much honesty as I possibly can, or whatever the case, versus the group of people that filled it out afterward. And what they found was the people that had to sign this academic or this honesty policy type thing ahead of the task were more likely to be honest. The problem is now that research has been found to be really sketchy and possibly dishonest. It's just like the most ironic thing and the biggest oop. And it's bad because it's really bad. I'll have to send it to you. Yeah. The worst part is that because it happened so long ago, the researchers had to depend on some of these insurance companies, because that was part of the task. I can't remember what it was. They were depending on insurance companies, and the insurance companies don't have that data anymore to like know for sure whether or not that happened. The biggest problem is how the researchers responded to it, which was essentially like, no, we weren't dishonest, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, this is the tea. This is cue Elena's right now. Like, it's a little ironic. So anyway, there's like stuff like that. And when this guy said this on this post was like the day that news broke, that this study that has affected so much in so many different fields, big oof. So there's a lot there. Also brain scan research is, there are a lot of limitations. That's the biggest piece, is we shouldn't toss it all out. I mean, that one probably, but as a whole, we shouldn't toss it all out. And we don't get to just be like, oh, well, you know, I haven't done any work and there's clearly a bias here. And so that's why I'm just saying that this phenomenon doesn't exist, right? And so clearly he had done no research. He talked about critical race theory and it was clear he knows absolutely nothing about critical race theory. So anyway, he blocked me real quick. And I'm like, you know, I would like to have a conversation where someone doesn't block me. Okay. Like, I know that means you're outed and you're feeling something about that, but like, I want the satisfaction.
Why is he even talking about that? Like, please just don't talk about that unless you have like, ooh, that's not a good look
for his client.
Not a good look. Very concerning.
Yeah. And then related, just the medical model in general, it's, you know, we branched away from the medical field. Of course, there were some like philosophical influences too, but it's just, we're trying to prove how, like, we're trying to justify our field. And unfortunately, the way that we're doing that it doesn't necessarily describe the human experience. It's a lot more complicated than if a specific antibiotic works on this very specific infection. Like, it's just very complicated. There are some medical fields where it's also complicated, and they also are kind of running into the same issues. And we have a replication crisis in our research where we tend to not redo those same studies to see, oh my God, does it just happen in this condition for this one study? Probably like that one. Or does it, like, is it going to keep happening over and over again, right? Like, can it be more generalized than what it is? And so there are just all these problems. So yeah, it's very much like we're focused too much on the research, but then we also don't want to swing the pendulum too far and just make shit up as we're going. And it's focused on what's wrong with the person. We're missing all these things outside of the person. What can help this person heal? But then also, what about what's going right for this person? What about the strengths of this person? So there are several limitations to the field. So yes, even though I'm very hard on other fields, I'm equally, if not harder, on our field.
Well, I think, that's real though. Like, and I think the thing is, when you're dealing with a human being, whatever the human being is going through, because it's mental health, it's gray. It's not black and white. So research, just because it worked within a certain population at a certain time. And let me tell you something, statistics and research was not my bag, not my thing. Don't know. Didn't pay attention in class. Don't know how it did. Don't know how things got the way they were, but I do know people, and it can change. It can vary from time to time to time to time. Like, and that's the thing. That's why this field of psychology, this is just ever growing and ever changing, because people change, things change, environments change, times change. So like, just like in any like circumstance, like one pair of jeans might fit 20 people great, and it's still not going to fit everybody great. So like, it's kind of like, yes, there might be a research article that says this, and that's great, but that's not going to mean for everybody. I'm just saying, like, this is the only approach to that, because you and I are similar in that sense that like, it really is individualized. At the end of the day, it is individualized.
Yeah, that's the, also, I thought the pants metaphor was great, by the way. I love that. That was great.
I come up with these things off the cuff and I'll do this in session. And then I sit back and I'm like, that was really fucking good.
You should write that down.
So write that down. Just hashtag or at me at some point and go for it. It's all yours.
I love it. That's great. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. No, there's this, for people that are not super familiar with research, there is this, again, it's a spectrum, and there's this dilemma between efficacy and effectiveness of a particular therapy in the medical field too. But with therapy, it's especially complicated because on the one hand, we want to isolate, like let's say major depressive disorder. That's typically what we think of when we think of depression turnaround. So we want to know, does this therapy work with this type of depression? Okay. So we isolate that as much as we possibly can to figure out if it will actually help. The cost to that is you don't know if it's actually going to work in the real world because it was so isolated to see like, okay, we want to make sure that there aren't any other variables here. For example, if that person has, I don't know, some type ADHD as well, or like some type of anxiety disorder, like social anxiety disorder, something in addition to that. So we want to make sure that the therapy works for that specific thing. The problem is in real life, if you have one diagnosis, you may have multiple. And so then it's more complicated. So there are costs to anything that you decide to go with as far as research goes. And I don't think that that's a part we're talking about enough. And probably because, again, we feel like we have to justify. So we really hang on to the findings and the words that we use. And I think I've just respected the professors the most that have had a lot of humility about like, there's actually a lot we really don't know. So
humility is key in this profession. Mm-hmm. All right. So we had basics. I have two more. I wanted to just bring my whole idea from beginning, middle to end was the basics. We get to deep cuts. We're like, I knew I was going to get you fired up, which was kind of my goal. I'm like here for, because like you get amped and I love to see it. So I'm like, let me just do it. I know how to push the button and I know what to do. So love that. Love that we had good talk. Now I have, let's see, one, two lighthearted questions.
Okay.
What celebrity or public figure would you want as a client in therapy?
Ooh.
I know.
Any public figure. Immediately I went to mental health professionals that are public figures. I don't know what that says. I'm thinking that's a good one. I've been watching a lot of reality TV and there are several people on there that I'm like, you know, that would be really fascinating.
We can name more than one. There's no rules here.
You know what? I'm going to say Donald Trump. Also Dr. Phil. Oh. I would have to, he's so terrible, but like, he would be so fascinating. They would both be so fascinating for me as clients, just because, you know, there's a lot of like shock value things there. There could be like stuff like intentionally pushing people's buttons. And I find that fascinating. And Dr. Phil, of course, that pisses me off even more because you're in our field and I kind of want to throat punch him. But as a client, he would be really fascinating. I also think Donald Trump would. Those are both like right up my alley for clients and like rolling with it. Yeah, I think they would both be really, really fascinating. Also, probably the entire cast of Real Housewives of New Jersey would be really fascinating to me. group therapy or like family therapy situation.
Oh my God, to be the therapist in a room with all of those personalities, I would flourish. Yeah. Flourish.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're from Jersey. So I feel like they might, you know, you have that buy-in, right?
I could speak their language. Yeah. I understand you. Yeah. I've walked places you've walked. I was at the Tiki Bar when Joe Gorga was there one time years ago. I know.
What?
Yes. These are local. Like these are people that like people, I know people who know them.
Wow.
I know, but like, I'm not like really, I'm no one here.
No, maybe that just made you a bigger deal than you already were.
That's what I think. Like, but this is just why maybe I'm a narcissist. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. And I know that like, it's all scripted stuff, but there's some real stuff that goes on there. I'd be more inclined to be like, I would love to work with like Teresa's daughters on their trauma because I work with a lot of teenagers. So that would be like, my bag. It's a good one. Donald Trump, what's your heart?
I think that would be fascinating.
I think it would be, honestly think you would be perfect. Perfect for him and for Dr. Phil.
Yeah, I think there would be some really interesting, really interesting pieces there. Yeah, those are probably the most, anyone that's like really controversial or provocative, even if it's just for show, right? Like even if they're doing this as like a personality just for publicity or whatever the case is, I still, the more controversial, the more I would want to see them, you know, like any of the, I know they're not technically public figures. We've unfortunately kind of made them into public figures, but people that are mass shooters that haven't then died by suicide or anything like that. I would really, or Jeffrey Epstein. I would have loved to have him as a client.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Meanwhile, I'm like, I'll take Lindsay Lohan any day. No. I will do any of that. Britney, I would love for Britney.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I would actually almost just want to like take her in and just help her.
Yeah.
Like I just want to let her live. Let the poor child live.
I would love her dad as a client, actually.
See, this is where you and I split off. Go ahead. Go on. I'll take that. You go there. That's fine. But I do like the good challenge for sure.
Yeah. And we can tag team it. That makes us a good team, I think.
Yes. We're onto something here. I don't know what's happening, but we're onto something. You also have New Jersey energy. So I really think that you would fit very well in the state.
Oh my God. Thank you. My best friend, he's from New Jersey. I don't sound like I'm from the South. If I get intoxicated, my Southern accent comes out a little bit, but I do have the sass. I have been told of someone not necessarily from the South, although I can pull the sass out in the Southern way. So I'm going to take that compliment. It's the best compliment this week.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. 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 We're our special breed over here. I mean, we really aren't, but like, we think that we are. That's what makes us that fucked up part. And like, we're not, but we think we are. Like, it's crazy. It's like a tough, you know, try and drive around here. You gotta be a little bit whatever, but I'm as much as I'm like a marshmallow with certain things, like I used to work with men in treatment, and I can worm my way into there and be like, I can get to that little sad little boy. Talk to me about him. Anyway. All right. One more question. And it's just not even mental health related. It's lighthearted because it's your birthday weekend and we've celebrated, we'll continue to celebrate because you deserve it. If you can have a cocktail with any celebrity for your birthday, who would it be? Or public figure, anyone besides me. I know. Right. Besides me, I'm included. Yes. That goes without.
Of course it does. Ooh. Any public figure. Ooh. Wait, do they have to be alive? Are they living?
No, I don't care. It's your birthday. You choose.
Okay. If I were to somehow talk to someone who's dead, but like in a non-creepy way in some alternate universe where they're still alive, I could have a cocktail with someone. Someone fun. I think I would pick, because I'd want to have a fun night out, I think. Not, we're not having a serious conversation, right? Where I'm like really trying to.
This is your birthday drinks. This is like birthday festivities.
Prince. 100%. I think I'd have to go with Prince. And then if someone who's alive right now, maybe it's just because it's not. I feel like the Real Housewives of New Jersey have fun when they go out and drink. I think that could be fun.
You are connected to the spirit of what goes on here. I see it. They do. I would drink with Dolores any day. Love her, Margaret. Yes.
I think also probably someone like I think Cardi B would be a lot of fun. Also, oh, Emma Stone. I have like the most random.
I love.
If we got everyone in a group together, that would be interesting.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I love that you went for the deceased musician because my instinct, no, I would have went for Freddie Mercury. That would have been my, that would have been it. Like I could have sat there. I don't care what the hell, I don't care what we were doing.
Yes.
That man. Yeah. I get it. I'm right there with you.
I love it. I love it. Yes. Also random. If it was like a Disney villain, I know this is very random. I'm not a huge Disney person, but if we're looking at Disney villains, I think I'd have to go with Maleficent. I need to cosplay her. She's on my list, by the way, of people to cosplay. And she's so kind petty. Of badass. Yeah, and she's so petty. Like, if we're taking the original Disney storyline before they added all the depth to her, she put everyone in a coma because she wasn't invited to a kid's birthday party. That's the energy that I need.
Well, on that note, I would drink wine with Cersei Lannister.
Yes. You know what? In Game of Thrones universe.
Oh my God. Don't. This could be a whole, can we just do a whole entire episode of just you and I talking about Game of Thrones?
Cause it's just, it's a whole side of me. You know what? It would have to be Cersei or Tyrion. Tyrion would be so, or Bronn. Bronn!
Oh yes. Okay. So look, there's two different aspects. We're going to we're going to play drinking games with Bronn and Tyrion.
Right.
But we're going to sit down and we're going to have a drink with Cersei and we're just going to figure it because that is a whole, that whole energy. My favorite scene of her is when they were storming. Stannis was storming. It was the Battle of Blackwater Bay. And she was talking to Sansa. They were all down in the Red Keep and whatever. And what she was saying, I can't, that is my favorite speech. I need to find the audio to that speech. Like, I don't even know if TikTok would ever let me post that, but I'm doing like a whole Game of Thrones meets therapy humor.
I love it. I love that. To give HBO credit, the fact that they have their own Game of Thrones channel. And so then you can use the music, like they must have licensed it somehow. I think that that's really cool. Cause there was a lot of audio, but yeah, Cersei, I hated her obviously, but like so much respect for her villain. Like my God.
I said this last night, I was hanging out with two of my friends and I said, she was an unapologetic bitch and that she did not try to be good. She did not pretend she was anything, but what she wasn't, she just was. And that was that.
Yes.
Got affected. Consistent. Her whole arc.
Yeah. It's fine. I think we're in agreement. If we're wanting like a fun drinking night, definitely Bronn and Tyrion together. Oh, yeah. Because they made the best team together as well.
100%. 100%. The snarky, sarcastic, witty, here for it.
If we're here for like the dark scheming stuff, obviously Cersei's gonna, and she drank wine, I think more than anyone maybe in the show. So clearly she probably knows the best wines as well.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm glad we covered this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Happy birthday,
McKenna. I love it. Thank you. Yes. Great happy birthday to me because of that.
And those are all the questions I got for you.
Awesome. Well, I feel like you should again give one more shout out for your page, like your Instagram, TikTok, so people can follow you. There is a lot of humor and some snarkiness, also a lot of helpful information. There's like a good mix, a good balance of things, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, I try to have like a good balance of like giving like general information and, you know, little like tough statements, like things that, you know, debunking toxic positivity, stuff like that and whatever. And then I do a lot of humor and I'm, you know, I try and like keep it light sometimes. So it's at Christina with a CH _ LPC, like my license, because I'm not that original. And my Instagram is Christina _LPC108. And I'm working on keeping my Instagram up. It's fine. It's fine.
There you go. Well, and TikTok, you know, there's a lot of entertaining stuff on there. And I think it is supposed to be humor driven anyway. So if people are wanting more mental health stuff, please go follow her. I hope you guys enjoy this. And thank you so much for interviewing me. This was definitely flipping the script from my typical style in the podcast.
I love it. I love it. Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
guys so much for listening. Definitely check out Christina's social media, particularly TikTok. She really has a great way of getting mental health information out there. Also a ton of humor. It's awesome. And I just want to, again, say a special thank you to you guys. I have such a fantastic support of listeners who've given me feedback, who haven't held back on the feedback, and also just send me messages on what you want to hear more from, what you're enjoying so far. I've learned so much in this first year. Honestly, it takes a lot more effort than I realized, if I'm being completely honest here. I have so much respect for audio engineers. Oh my God. And as this year has kind of grown, so has the platform here a little bit, where recently, like we talked about in the episode, it's more about trying to portray complex information in a way that makes sense on social media and in the podcast, tackling misinformation. And I'm sure that that's going to keep evolving over time. And of course, I want your feedback on that. What is missing out there that I can help bring light to, answer questions? I think that's also important. And also the topics have been incredible. I hope to continue that and also branch out even further beyond mental health, psychology. I've dabbled in that. I really want to dive into even broader like health or science related topics and kind of go from there because I think it's so amazing. And I've heard feedback from both. People want more specific episodes on mental health, which I can definitely do that. Some people want to branch out a little bit and I can definitely do that too. And so I don't think there's a right or wrong way to do this. We can definitely tackle all the things. And I so appreciate you guys and just wanted to give something back to you because you don't necessarily get to hear, you know, this side of me quite as much in my episodes, probably definitely not on my Instagram. There's not enough space or time. And just as a gigantic thank you to you guys, and I hope you enjoyed it. I'm kind of speechless. I can't believe it. And I hope to continue doing more episodes. So thank you guys.